You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This Thursday episode of Locked On Jets is brought to you by MyBookie.ag. Use the promo code LOCKEDON at MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. Thanks for joining us today. I am John B. from GangreneNation.com. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe to it. Your options include iTunes and Spotify. And please leave the show a good review. While you're doing that, leave your Twitter handle and you have a chance to win a pro football focused subscription. It is Thursday, and on Thursdays on our podcast, we do a mailbag typically. Last week we did not because the Jets played a Thursday game, but the mailbag returns today. So let's jump into the questions both emailed to me and submitted in the comments section of GangreneNation.com. First question is about the tight end position for the Jets. Do you think the Jets should lock up Austin Seferian Jenkins for a couple of years? He's looking good. Have we found something with him and Tomlinson for the long term? Well, I think the question with Seferian Jenkins comes down to how much would it cost to lock him up? He's been a lot better than anything the Jets have had at the tight end position, but I do think there's a little bit of the effect that the Jets have had gotten literally nothing from the tight end position for years, so a guy who does anything is going to look pretty good. I mean, this is not Rob Gronkowski, this is not Tony Gonzalez, this is not a tight end of that caliber, this is not an upper echelon tight end. This is a guy who's brought a few skills to the table. He's, like I've said this on a couple shows, he's done a good job finding the soft spot of the defense on some short routes, and he's looked pretty good after the catch, but there are still some questions. I mean, can you work him down the field? I'm not saying you can't, but the Jets haven't really tried to yet. They haven't tried to work him down the seam, so he's not contributing a lot of big plays in the passing game. And even that tight end, that touchdown that got wiped out last Thursday, was really not a great play by Seferian Jenkins. I mean, I watched the game last week. They did try to get him down the field a couple times. He just got no separation. And Josh McCown's not making many great plays, but that was really a great play by Josh McCown, more so than it being a great play by Austin Seferian Jenkins. So the question is this: when we say lock up Austin Seferian Jenkins, are we talking about $2 million a year, $3 million a year? If it's something in that range, then yeah, I would think about it. If we're talking $6, $7 million a year, well, then I think you have to reconsider whether this is the type of player who fits into this team long term. Because I think that the philosophy you have to take at a certain price is, we found this guy kind of off the scrap heap and we developed him into a useful player. We can do it again. We'll have to find the next Seferian Jenkins. So it depends on the price. We'll see what happens. I think the question about whether he is the guy going forward, he and Tomlinson are a duo going forward, we have to wait and see. We have to see how much they can provide. We have to see how much they can improve. How much can Tomlinson give you as a receiver? Can he be a function? Tomlinson really only needs to be a functional receiver. Seferian Jenkins, can he work down the field a little more? Can he have success getting open down the field and providing some bigger plays? He's not providing a lot of big plays right now. He's playing pretty well, but he's not providing type of plays that where I say, well, you got to keep this guy. It would be nice to keep this guy. And one of the things that's important to remember is that part of his value right now is in the fact he's making nothing. Most players who make nothing provide you zero value. So the fact you have a guy making nothing providing you value, that's part of the reason he's helping this team right now is the salary. You know, it's not that dissimilar to when you go out to a restaurant for a meal, you might find this really solid meal for $17. Which is a great value. You're very happy with that. Whereas that exact same meal, if you're being charged like $80, $90 for it, you're not as happy for it. You're not, so I think the same thing comes into play here is that part of the value these players provide is how much are you paying them? And a guy can actually become a net negative if you pay him too much. So I think this is a guy who would be nice if the Jets could re-sign for a reasonable deal, but I don't think it's absolutely essential. And there are cases where, sometimes it makes sense. I don't think this is the type of player where you can say we have to keep him at every cost. This was the philosophy the Jets took with Brian Winters. And now Winters is on what just looks like a terrible deal. It would have been, it's nice to keep Winters, but not at the price the Jets kept him at. They made a really bad deal, and now they're kind of stuck with him. So you don't want to get into that situation. So, it depends. It depends. Next question. DeMario Davis and Darren Lee have played much better the last few games. Is it due to them improving, or is it due to the defensive line playing better and keeping them clean? Well, I will tell you this. The uptick in quality from the inside linebacker position, it's not an accident that's happened during Muhammad Wilkerson's resurgence. And I think that it's especially true with the two guys you have in the middle of this defense. These are both guys who are better working in space than they are taking on blockers and shedding them. Now, I do think you have to give them credit because their play has been better. And in Davis's case, Davis played some really solid games. Davis's best games of the year, I think, actually came before the Wilkerson resurgence. So that's a factor here. You can't totally credit it. And look, there have been points where Lee's gotten off blocks over these last 3 weeks. But yeah, it's not an accident. The way this defense is built, you're expecting the defensive line to dominate and make life easy for the linebackers, make it easy for these linebackers to operate. That's really the way I think this is how they drew it up. I mean, we know Davis is not a guy who is great at getting off blocks, and we know that Lee, I think when Lee was drafted, the whole idea was that the Jets had a dominant defensive line, so we could just play straight, just go attack the ball, go get what's in front of him. So, but I think it does have an impact, but I don't think you can totally dismiss the linebackers playing well because, well, part of the reason, especially in Lee's case, part of the reason they got him was they felt like this was a guy who fit well with the type of defensive line play the Jets got. So I think that was part of the equation. So, a little bit, not completely though. Next question, also about Davis. DeMario Davis is third in the NFL with 75 tackles and 3.5 sacks week 9, having a great year, impressive turnaround. If he finishes with 125 tackles and 8 sacks, he finds his way into a Pro Bowl uniform, wears his market, he'll be 29 in January, plays fast, solid health-wise, 16-game seasons. What price do you keep him for and how long? So here's the thing about Davis. 75 tackles, but you have to remember 20 of those 75 came the first 2 weeks. And he was awful the first 2 weeks. So you can't always go based on tackle totals. Now, inside linebacker is just not a position where you see teams paying for impact. The price of an inside linebacker is substantially lower than the price of a lot of other positions. It's not really viewed as an impact position in this league. So I think you have to keep that in mind when it comes to the market Davis is going to have. I mean, there are only three guys in the entire league averaging $10 million a year at the inside linebacker position. There's only four who are averaging nine, six who are averaging eight, seven who are averaging seven, 10 averaging more than five. So I think the price for Davis is very low. And I mean, every year you see off-ball linebackers, you see guys who are even good making $2 million a year or less. With Davis, you're looking at a guy who, is not that young, who's relatively old, and who's really, this is one good season. I mean, he's really not been that great. And there have been some real hiccups within this season. So, I mean, I don't mean to diminish that Davis is playing well, because I think he is playing pretty well, but this is just not a guy who's going to have a lot of value out in the market. And I think it would be a mistake to overpay. I think, you'd set a hard cap. I don't know, would it be in the $2 million range, the $3 million range? I don't know, but I feel like every year you see quality off-ball linebackers who are getting paid less than $2 million in free agency. So this is not a guy I would necessarily stretch to keep, because I'm not sure that there's going to be a big offer for him in the off season. And it's another guy where it's another situation where you have to play it smart. You don't want to get yourself caught up in a bad deal. Since we started this podcast, people have been asking for advice, and in many instances it's which team is going to win this week: Patriots, Steelers, Chicago, Detroit. Well, let me tell you this. Where you are betting at is just as important as whom you're betting on. So you can think about going to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been in the business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so right off the bat, you're making money for doing nothing. and they have the fastest payouts. Seriously, just two business days. You know who's going to win, right? So lay down some cash and win big today. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 100% bonus. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate your offer. And I think my two picks for this weekend would be Pittsburgh over Indianapolis and the Rams over Houston. Two very unsettled quarterback situations in the AFC South. So I think those would be my two picks. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Let's jump it back into our questions here. With the Jets currently performing way above expectations, how comfortable are you with Mac and Bowles to in control for the immediate future? Are you optimistic for next season with this team plus a ton of cap room and another draft? Well, I think that these guys have earned another season probably. But look, there's a lot of work to do. I mean, this is a team that they're beating expectations, but they're beating expectations and they're 4-5. And Mike Maccagnan, he gave his midseason press conference yesterday. He even said, you know, he said something to the effect of, look, we can't be going too crazy about 4-5. We can't be celebrating that too much. It's not that hard to go 4-5 in this league. And this is a team, you have to remember, this is a team where they beat expectations going 4-5. So the Jets have a lot of work to do, and most of this roster is going to need to be overhauled. I think we've seen enough to say that these guys probably are going to, and things can change. Like, this team may lose out, and then you change your mind. I think these guys have done enough. I think they've done a good job this year. I think they've done enough to earn another season, but that's a very different thing from saying these guys I feel great about these guys long term. I don't know yet about these guys long term. I think we have to see how things play out. I'm not ready to declare that I feel good about them. I'm not ready to declare I feel bad about them. I think we need to see how things play out. Now, you talk about the draft. Well, I mean, every team's got the draft. So just saying that you can improve through the draft, I mean, that's all 32 teams. And yeah, the Jets have cap space, but the Jets don't really have a lot of players worth paying. So that, you know, you have situations last year like New England where you won the Super Bowl and you have tens of millions of cap space. And then you have a situation like the Jets where you have tens of millions of cap space, but you need to get good players. And it's tricky because that money never goes as far as you think it will. It never does. And people say, yes, it will. No, it never does. Because, first of all, there are players you have to bring back. We talked earlier in the show. People want to bring, you know, if you want to bring back Austin Seferian Jenkins, it's going to cost money. DeMario Davis is going to cost money. Morris Claiborne, that's a guy who's going to cost money. I mean, so if you want to bring these guys back, that's going to cost money. And if you don't, well, then those guys are going to have to be replaced. And free agency is tricky. Free agency is just, you don't get guys on good deals, especially, you know, when you're bringing in players from other teams, because quality players from other teams are free, become free agents because they want a ton of money. So, you know, this cap space is a little bit, there's a little bit of a mirage to this, because you're not going to be able to fix this entire team with cap space. It's going to have to happen through the draft. It's going to have to happen through a number of quality drafts. So we'll see. I'm in wait and see mode on Maccagnan and Bowles. I think they've both done good jobs this year, but to me, that's different from saying I've totally trust them long term. I think we have to see what they do. Next question. Did you notice the Jets D-line doing anything different scheme-wise last week? If not, what accounts for them being that much better than they had been? Well, I think there's just one guy who sticks out. It's Muhammad Wilkerson. And, I mean, I can't answer why he's so much better. You know, we talked about last year's leg injury, and, you know, there's been this speculation that maybe he's getting healthy. But the thing is, we know he hasn't been getting healthy. We know he's been hurt. He hasn't been able to practice in a few weeks. And Mike Maccagnan said yesterday, you know, we knew about the upper body injury. Apparently, he's been playing through a broken toe. So it's difficult to say. I don't think it's really anything. I'm not sure it's anything scheme-wise. I mean, the one thing you can say is that they lined him up against Vladimir Dukas a lot. So I guess that accounts for it. But he's been playing very well these last few weeks. And as I've said on this show a couple times, you know, he's playing against a pretty bad lineman the last year and a half and had some really bad games. So I don't think you could totally account it to Dukas. I just think, I don't know why Muhammad Wilkerson's playing so much better. I think you'd be guessing if you said you did know, but it's just, you know, sometimes it's just about guys playing better. It's one of the things you always hear about is coach, you know, the coach making a second half adjustment. You always hear that with fans, not just Jets fans, but fans across the NFL. The team plays well in the second half, they talk about their coach making second half adjustments. If they don't play well, well, the coach didn't make adjustments. And I can probably count the times on one hand, people are actually specific about what adjustments needed to be made or didn't need to be made. Or it's just like one of those things that I think is a buzz. It's just like a buzz phrase, like second half adjustments. Like nobody really ever specifies what second half adjustments are there. And more often than not, it's just the players play better in the second half. It's not something the coach did. It's not some adjustment the coach made. It's just the players playing better. And I think that's kind of what's happened with the Jets, where Wilkerson just played better and it makes the entire line look better. Because I think McClendon was having a solid season. I think Leonard Williams has been a little disappointing, but it's not like Leonard Williams has been bad this year. Leonard Williams has been very good. He's not been the all-pro you were hoping he'd grow into, but he's been a good player, and Coney Ealy's been a nice part-time guy. So, you know, I don't know that it's really scheme. I guess you could point to the Wilkerson-Dukas matchup that they made sure they got, but, you know, I think they've done a pretty good job. You know, I think it's just the players playing better. And our last question, John Morton, do you like his offense so far? West Coast offenses can be complicated to learn. Is that a concern at all when drafting a rookie quarterback? I'm trending positive on Morton. You know, I think he hasn't been given a lot. The Jets' offensive stats aren't that great, but there also isn't a lot of talent on this offense. I mean, you look at the skill positions. This is a weak group of skill players. I mean, I don't think there's any other way to put it. You know, there are a few brights. You know, Powell is not bad, and Anderson's starting to grow into something as a wide receiver. But I mean, you put this group of skill players versus other groups of skill players in the NFL, this is going to rate pretty low. And you know, quarterback, you have McCown, who with his flaws, so, and the offensive line is not very good. So this is not a team that's overflowing with great talent on the offensive side of the ball. So I think wherever they, you know, the stats aren't that good, but I think they actually have overachieved based on the talent they have. I think Morton does a good job. I think he's a good play designer. I like his situational play calling. I haven't really had a lot of complaints with the situational play calling this year. I'm not in love with him as a game planner. I think game planning is always kind of a mix between, do you go with your team's strength or do you try and attack the other team's weakness? And sometimes these are mutually exclusive because sometimes the other team's weakness, to attack that, you have to use your weakness. I think this is a Jets offense that doesn't have a ton of talent. I think to the extent this team has talent, it's in the running back position. I think on a week-to-week basis, the Jets would probably stick to their strengths more and use the running back position. So that's one of the things I don't love about Morton. I think that's something worth watching. But I think overall the reviews are cautiously positive for him so far. I think you've seen things that make you optimistic. I'm not ready to declare Morton the next great offensive mind in the league, but I think he's done a pretty good job so far. As far as the second part of the question goes, I mean, look, it is a concern. And even, you know, a couple of weeks ago we had Matt Forte on the show, and Forte said that this is a very complicated offense. He talked about, you know, the verbiage on this offense is complicated. The verbiage is the way, you know, the play calls. And this is a guy who's been in the league a long time, played in a lot of offensive systems, and he's saying this is a complicated offense. So I think there is a concern with that. You know, a lot of these, you know, there are some quarterbacks in college who don't have playbooks. And there are a lot of quarterbacks who don't, you know, they don't make play calls in the huddle. They look over and they have these big cards with these ridiculous pictures calling the plays on the sideline. So I do think, you know, bringing a quarterback, it's going to, I mean, that's just an issue in today's NFL. That's the way college offenses are run these days. So on some level, of course, there's quarterbacks who are going to have a playbook for the first time. There are quarterbacks who are going to have to deal with the verbiage of the play call for the first time. But this is going to be this, you know, what the Jets have, it might be greater degree of difficulty than other people have. So yeah, I think it is something to have some concern over. But of course, if you're drafting a guy early, you think he can learn it pretty quickly. You know, I mean, there are quarterbacks who come out of college, you know, kind of gimmicky college systems, who come and play great right away. Cam Newton, rookie of the year, Dak Prescott last year. I mean, these were not guys who played in, you know, offenses you'd consider pro-style offenses. It's not necessarily, see, I think this is the mistake people make when it comes to draft evaluation. People say, this guy doesn't play in a pro-style system. That's not the same thing as this guy cannot learn to play in a pro-style system. And some of these guys learn very quickly, so that's something to keep in mind. Thanks for tuning in today. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to the show. Options include iTunes and Spotify. And please give the show a good rating. Hope you have a great Thursday. We will be back again Friday to talk Buccaneers Jets.